We got a special guest today. Blake Griffin joins the Kevin O'Connor Show. That's coming up right now. What was that Norm Macdonald joke? There's a curse with Rookie of the Year.
Nobody's ever won it twice. Yeah, I had no idea. He was no clue he was even in the audience. He was coming. And then, like, yeah, he kind of like snuck in and sat down, and I didn't even. Yeah, it was awesome.
Dude was an absolute legend. I guess might as well start, right? Blake Griffin, former Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, only once though.
One that never repeated. Yeah. We'll talk about some rookies later, Blake. Appreciate you joining me. Of course, you're doing stellar coverage with Amazon. We'll talk about the NBA Cup, starting with Victor Wembanyama, because I'll tell you what, comes back, plays 21 minutes, dominates the game, instant impact. Immediately, as soon as he checked into the game.
So that was my first time seeing him in person, which is like a highly recommend experience, because it's like you can't really tell. I mean, you can see it on TV, but when you see it up close, it's a whole different thing. And the way he moves, I love the tenacity he played with last night. Like he was angry in the best possible way. And it's by his standards, or the standards we are going to hold him to, I don't even think he played that great. Like, he did play good. I'm not trying to say he didn't play well, but I think there's just so many other levels he's going to go to, that I don't know. It's really scary. I think that's the word everybody uses.
I mean, he was on a restriction.
Yeah.
So of course, like, he's going to be able to play better. We know he has greater heights offensively.
Yeah.
Defensively though, the way he changes the court. I mean, in that game, Oklahoma City had a 83.3 offensive rating when Wemby was on the floor, 113.1 when Wemby was off the floor. The biggest difference was on their shot distribution. When Wemby was off the floor, they took 29% of their shots at the rim, and that dropped to 10%. When Victor Wembanyama was on the floor, they became a 3-point shooting team.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, he defensively, last night in, I think it was the third quarter, he had a possession where he came down, guarded Chet. Chet tried to drive, went up for a shot, blocked it. Ball kind of came back out. Then Wemby inverted, and you can see him like demonstratively wave the invert. And to me, that's like the next step for Wemby, is like, him now really controlling everybody else to put himself always in the best position. Because right now he's just making up for stuff just by being insanely talented. But last night, watching him like direct traffic and like really put himself in the best position to help his team was like a step that is like, again, I will keep using the word scary, because it's just like there's no other way to describe his game.
Well, I mean, people talk about how he'll improve a lot offensively over the years. Isolation efficiency, like as a ball handler, as a shot creator and all that. You're talking about him getting even better defensively.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I mean, and part of that is just making it a little bit easier on himself defensively. But yeah, he can still get better defensively, which is crazy, because you just read those numbers. Yeah. Those are out of this world. But his understanding and his ability to direct traffic and then be in the right spot to be able to help everybody at the same time, will take him to the next level. And he's already doing a fantastic job. And I thought last night, like, for a young guy, when you come back from an injury or extended period of time, it's all like timing. Like, you know, you want to move so fast. And you saw that a little bit with his handle. I expect that to come back very, very quickly. But that's all I mean when I said he didn't play like out of this world. He's just so good that like his just solid coming back minute restriction game is out of this world.
After one of those turnovers you mentioned where it seemed like he was sped up a little bit, I saw him kind of walk back to the opposing free throw line. He was like,
yeah.
Kind of like talked to himself a little bit, like took a deep breath, and you could tell he was calming the nerves. Yeah. I mean, I think it's only natural after you're out for a month.
Yeah, I mean, that was always the thing I noticed when I was younger, especially. It's just like, man, like you miss even like a week or two. You come back and you're just like a half second off, you know, and it comes back like very, very quickly. The older you get, the easier it is to come in and out.
Like riding a bike type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And certain players, like, it feels like they never skip a beat. But I definitely had that. You know, when you're young, you're feeling everything out. Everything's like new to you.
In a way, he didn't. I mean, his first two possessions, he grabbed the offensive board, put it back, and then he had the kick out for the three-pointer. It's like his impact was immediate right away in that game on both ends of the floor. And I think with the Spurs, I mean, we saw in the playoffs last year against Oklahoma City, they go to seven games against Denver playing a ton of zone. They turn OKC into a jump shooting team. They take him to seven. Wemby, of course, he's a one of one, but they turn them into a jump shooting team. Is could that be sort of the formula to at least minimize what the Thunder can be, is trying to turn them into a jump shooting team? Could we see more teams playing zone against them perhaps and moving forward in the season?
Yeah, I mean, listen, if I had like the if I had the answer, I think I'd be, you know, somebody would hire me
as the highest paid head coach of the league ever.
Yeah.
I have the answers for 24-2 exactly. team.
Listen, this is how you do it right here. Yeah, I mean, that's always like, right, like, you, what are you willing to give up? Yeah, jump shots, right? Because like, some days you're gonna get lucky. Some days they're not gonna be shooting well. I thought San Antonio's guards, I sat on the court for the first quarter and watching their San Antonio's physicality on defense is really what made me be like, oh wow, they will still have a chance in this game. Their numbers shooting wise in the first quarter were atrocious.
It was horrible, yeah.
But their physicality on defense is what kept them in the game. And it, you know, it was a 12-point game or something like that, maybe at the end of the quarter, maybe 10, I can't remember. But
the 16, I think, mid-second before Wemby checked in.
But like that physicality and that the way they played, I thought it was similar to Oklahoma City, where, dude, San Antonio was beating Oklahoma City to loose balls, and not just beating them, like getting there first, kind of like running through them, beating them to loose balls. Like it was a pretty physical game, or at least from what I could see on that end. So yeah, I mean, I think trying to keep SGA on one side, right, keep him out of the middle third, try to eliminate his passes to the opposite side of the floor, like kind of all those things. And for San Antonio in particular, inverting Wemby as much as possible, you know, and keeping him in the right position, not letting him get strung out on the defensive end.
What do you mean by that, by inverting Wemby?
So anytime in that particular play I was talking about with Chet tried to score, kind of got the rebound, Wemby blocked the shot, and Chet kind of floated back up, and Wemby just waved the low man, the guy below him, up to guard Chet, so Wemby stayed down to the basket. You know, so like anytime you can keep Wemby at the basket, to me, obviously, I think it's pretty obvious to everybody, that's a win for the Spurs. So him being able to always direct that, and also the other guy, like Vassell, Castle, Fox, HB, like all those guys being able to recognize that as well and all work around that, I think will help their defense even more.
I mean, I think that's going to be one of the things on Tuesday against the Knicks as well. Like, you're going to see the Knicks try to stretch out Wemby with Karl Anthony Towns. Yeah. But the Spurs are going to do everything possible to have him hovering near the rim.
Yeah.
The problem is there's not really a non-shooter or stationary guy. You're going to probably try it against Josh Hart, but moving and cutting and everything on the floor.
Last year you would have put Wemby on Hart and let Hart sit in the corner and keep Wemby there. I don't know. I'm actually interested to see both ways. Like, who does Brunson guard? I'm interested to see who guards Wemby. I'm assuming OG.
I would think so.
In their starting unit. Who guards Wemby in their non-OG minutes will be interesting.
Will they double like OKC did in a lot of possessions as well?
So I'm excited. I haven't, to be honest, after last night, I didn't like think much about the final match, but I'm excited for that game.
Does Victor Wembanyama have a chance to be the GOAT?
Yeah, man, this is so I mean, yes. Like you look at him and you can see how he impacts everything. Like, yes. I do think that there's so much talent in the league right now, and teams are so good, especially these young guys that are so good, that the talent is so high that I'm just excited for the future of the league in general. But yes, Wemby has a chance. I mean, you see his impact. Like you said, Wemby skipping a beat is very different than other people skipping. It was just a couple possessions here or there, but his impact is ridiculous.
It's going to be a matter of what he becomes offensively, because defensively we know what he is.
Right.
Like you said, he's going to get even better as his mind even grows more at understanding the nuances of defense and controlling all five, like you said. But offensively, does he become a primary guy, a primary creator, or is he more of just finisher in a lot of situations? I think he will become at some point more of a creator on the team. But the Spurs now, with all of their guards, with Fox and Harper and Castle, he has a lot of support now.
Yeah. And I know so much is made about, you know, this guy is 7'4", 7'5", with a handle and a jump. Yeah, whatever. After last night, I'm like, 7'8"? Did he grow last night? lots made about his handle and how good it is, his shot and how good it is. But at the same time, again last night, there were some possessions too where you're just like, we don't need to show it here, you know? And I think he'll continue to get better at knowing when to use it and when not to use it. And a lot of teams, what you're seeing obviously is teams put a smaller guy on him and just press up underneath him. And I was talking to Udonis last night when we were watching the game, and you're kind of like, man, I was trying to think through like what I would be if I'm his coach, right? If I'm like watching film with him, what would I be talking to him about? And I think it's like him getting that shot that I think Porzingis does this really well, is he kind of like keeps the ball up here. Actually, Tim Duncan did it really well too, is keeping the ball up and letting somebody get underneath you. I used to try to do this sometimes when people did this, and then you just rise up and shoot, and that person has to back up or they're going to get a foul call because they press up into him so much. So it's, I think it's like little things like that. I'm not saying that's like the answer, but it was just kind of a thought last night that I kind of want to like think through on ways for him to like really optimize himself offensively. Because yes, he will be a creator, but you have to kind of be a creator as it's given to you, like as the game comes to you. Like I wouldn't love to see him just handling up top and, you know, running pick and rolls all the time until that becomes a very comfortable part of his game. Cause then you're also taking the ball out of Vassell's hands and Castle's hands and, you know, those guys that can also play. Exactly. So yeah,
I think it's interesting you mentioned Porzingis. Like I'm thinking about one time when the Celtics had Marcus Smart defending him. This was like peak KP with the Knicks and whatever.
Yeah.
And he had a really hard time against a smaller guard defending him. And I remember then he went to Dallas and I interviewed KP at a practice and I asked him about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, well, how do you deal with it? He's like, I spent the whole summer working on how do I respond to when a team puts a smaller player on me.
Yeah.
And like for the rest of his prime, he was very good at it, you know, with doing a lot of as you described. Yeah. It's almost as if he didn't mention Tim Duncan, but it did seem like he pulled a little bit of keeping the ball high, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed it in when he was in Boston. Porzingis did a really good job of just kind of like just shooting over the top, like, and not trying to like get around, not trying to do too much, right?
Use your height.
Exactly. Keep it very, very simple. That was another thing I was watching when we warm up last night. And they were working a lot on kind of like, obviously him getting position and people just like being as physical as possible is the game plan. And I was watching him kind of like work on that with an assistant coach. I couldn't tell if it was kind of part of like him, like not rehab, but you know, him just a new thing that he's working on. But I do think in like those situations that you always see younger guys, walk to their spot that they want to catch at and then turn and try to catch the ball there. And Wemby's so tall that it's almost like you want to walk just like 3 or 4 feet past where you want to catch, turn there. They will push you back to that spot. And he's so tall that it doesn't matter. Like if you can front, you're going to be guarded with a shorter guy anyway. They can front. It doesn't matter. Just throw it over the top, you know? And then he's like in his actual spot. Cause it's hard, man. When you're guarded by smaller guys and they have the leverage, they're allowed to be more physical. And they can push you off your spot a little bit easier. So all those things are what I'm just so excited. And the best part about it is like you can see Wemby how much he cares and how much he works at it. You know what I mean? So it's going to happen.
I mean, he's just an elite work ethic, elite team around him.
Elite mind.
Yeah. I mean, like I interviewed him at the end of his rookie season and I'm like, oh my God, this guy is a teenager.
Yeah.
I mean, how does he have the mind that he does?
JJ Redick, I think, interviewed him right before the draft. Yes. And I was texting with JJ and he was like, dude, I can't believe this kid's 18. He was like, the things he was saying is like, it doesn't sound right.
The amount of wisdom is like somebody who's lived many lives before.
Yeah.
He's mastered many things already.
We might be on to something. He might have. something's not right.
I know.
And we're going to get to the bottom of this.
Something is off. It's the truth. Like, he might be evidence for past lives.
Exactly. We should like start slowly asking him questions about like the 1960s. He's like, oh, yeah, I remember. Oh.
Oops,
we got you.
I asked him at the end of my interview with him, I was like, are you an alien really? He's like, I might be.
Yeah, I love that.
I mean, speaking of surreal players though, you yourself were a surreal player.
One
of the greatest dunkers in the history of the game, one of the greatest athletes we've seen in sports. What was your greatest dunk ever?
Oh man. I don't know. People always ask me, I kind of always say like Perkins one, just cause I enjoyed that one. Cause he was such a, like a, you know, just like a, he always had the scowl on his face and he was like a not a mean person, but a mean player, you know, he had that mean streak to him, but I don't know. I guess I'd go with that one. Mozgov, the that Knicks game was kind of like the first time that, like, you know, it was like a viral moment. And I just kind of remember, like, after that, like, it sort of just never slowed down after that. So that one will always stick out as well.
I mean, his head was in your yeah. Your hand was on his head. Yeah.
It's for balance.
For balance.
Fall over, you know?
That's the one that comes to mind for me. Probably because it's the first one, like you said. But I think I was watching a highlight reel, the Gallo dunk transition spin.
I love that one because it kind of combines, like, a lot of, you know, it was like the dribbles, you know, it was a lot to it. But I don't know. I don't think about it that much.
Yeah, I mean, understandably so. But, you know, it's not like you're watching your own highlights reel. But the oh me, oh my.
Yeah,
what a call
for Ralph your Waller, stuff. Man.
Unbelievable. What's the first time you remember throwing the ball in?
Oh, man, that's a good question. Probably college. I think that was like, it was usually like on alley-oop, you know, when you kind of miss time, misjudge, maybe the pass is too far. I did it in a preseason game. Rookie year, but right before I got hurt against the Lakers, Mbanga. Remember DJ Mbanga?
Oh, wow, yeah.
He came across the lane and we kind of went chest to chest, and I couldn't get there, and I just kind of threw it in, and I was like, wow, like that, like actually, that was the first time I did it in a game. You know, the other times were like sort of practice. So that was like the first time where I was just kind of like, oh, if I can't get there, like still try. You know, there's no sure. sense in not.
It, yeah. It's like a shot.
Yeah, except, exactly.
You know, it's some type of dunk. Yeah. Who came up with the idea to dunk over a car?
So I did. I had pulled up to the practice facility right when I just agreed to do the dunk contest. And Baron Davis had this like old school Cadillac, like drop top Cadillac. And I was sitting in my car in the parking lot, like finishing a phone call. And he pulls up next to me. And I was looking at it and I was like, I think I could jump over that. You know, and So I got out of the car and I asked him. He's like, yeah, for sure. Like, let's do it. And so I told whoever that I wanted to do that. And then they came back and it was like, hey, needs to be a Kia. I'm like, okay. Like, be great if it was a Kia Optima. And I'm like, all right. Well, that's going to kind of ruin. Like, I don't know if I can do that. But I still wanted to do it. So I, you know, we figured it out and jumped over the hood, which wasn't as impressive, but it was still, you know, at the time, like, you know, guys were bringing out like the ball rack and stuff like that. So I was like, all right, this is kind of a cool moment.
Is there a dunk you ever wanted to do that you were unable to?
Yeah. I mean, I see like what these guys, like Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon, these guys, I can't do. I'm not really a dunk contest dunker. Like, I don't think I ever really was. I think also for big men, it's a little bit harder. Like Dwight Howard was so impressive in the dunk contest because he was so big and he did well, but he didn't win. I mean, did he do it four times, three times?
Yeah, I think so.
He won one?
Yeah.
But still, he was great, but I'm not really a dunk contest dunker. The one advice I do have for like anybody that does dunk contest now is make sure you have like, if you're supposed to have four dunks, have eight. Or maybe even 10 that you know you can do, because DeMar DeRozan went right before me, did the dunk I was about to do. And, you know, we had no clue. I'm not saying he didn't obviously do it on purpose.
It's like two ladies wearing the same outfit to a wedding. Exactly. Or
oh, this is embarrassing. So I'm sitting there on like the next up thing and DeMar does it. And I'm just like, oh no. Like that was, so then I kind of switched around some stuff and like, I was like underprepared for sure for that dunk contest. It was just like a whirlwind of a year, of a season.
One of the things that really impressed me about your career was your evolution. I mean, obviously you start out, you're a top pick and you're an elite dunker and you become more of a ball handler over time and you add the three-pointer to your career. Mm-hmm. What was the motivation behind that to add those layers to your game?
I mean, really just to get better, to be honest. I hired a shooting coach after my rookie year. You know, and I don't think if I hadn't have done that then, I don't think I would have been able to implement some of those things. You know, I think like after like my year three, year four, you know, that was still like the mid-range became more and more a part of my game. But doing it right then, I honestly probably should have done it before my rookie year. But it was just, again, it was like you get drafted and you don't know what you're about to
different
go into.
Era of the game,
yeah,
too,
yeah, for sure.
Right.
For sure.
It's not like all bigs were shooting back then. It was Dirk and
Kevin Love at the time was like
Kerr,
yeah, I mean,
there wasn't many.
Yeah,
Trey Murphy, not yeah, Trey Murphy. Yeah, yeah. Troy Murphy.
Nenad Kristic was shooting some threes,
but there wasn't a lot.
No, there was not a lot. And even like, dude, that was before Dirk had won, And so you were always hearing those rumblings of like, man, Dirk, like he shoots too many threes. Soft, like he's Europeans. Soft, he's soft. And then he wins and everybody's like, oh, you're the greatest, like, which he is. But it's so funny how like, you know, that mm-hmm. works. Like it doesn't work until it does work. But I don't know. Just trying to be a better player, honestly, and adding that shot and then getting to like, you know, I think maybe after my third, fourth year, I think I was probably shooting like league average from mid range for a big. And that just like sort of gave me confidence. And my shooting coach, Bob Tate, rest in peace, who was, you know, so huge for me. And like, he would tell me like after 2 years of working together, he'd be like, you're going to shoot threes. You're going to shoot like five threes in a game at one point in your career. And I'm like, you're nuts. You are absolutely nuts. And not only did it come true, it came true 5 years later. You know, it wasn't like a long time. It wasn't this like crazy jump, but he had like that vision. And I'm just so glad I started when I did, because if I had sort of held out and just like, you know, had too much of an ego to be like, I don't need a shooting coach or whatever it was. Not too much of an ego, but, you know, if I had held out and not implemented that, I don't think my career could have sustained as long as it did.
Now, a lot of time when you talk to players, they say, oh, you know, how are you working on improving your shot? They say, oh, just getting reps, getting reps, getting mm-hmm. reps. It's always what people say. Is it really just getting reps?
Well, not for me. My shooting coach, I mean, we like stripped everything down. Like I kind of completely forgot. I tried to forget about the way I formerly shot the basketball, and it was, it's one of the most frustrating things. I mean, if you walked into the gym, like you'd see basketballs like flying off the wall sometimes, you know, just like at the end of the workout, where I'm just like, I just can't, like, this is so frustrating, because it's this game that I've been playing my whole life and it's very familiar to me. But retooling a jump shot and unlearning bad habits was difficult for me. But then on top of that, yes, it is reps, right? But it's a little bit more than that. We broke it down like piece by piece by piece.
Is it like at all like film study, like close-ups of your hands or anything like that? Like any specific details?
At first it was more film. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. At first it was more feel. Uh-huh. And then it was a little bit more film. So we would sort of get different things. Like I had a tendency to kind of almost like not fade away, but as I would rise up, my like chest would move further away from the basket, right? So it was kind of like that thing of moving away from the rim. So now my head's moving away from the rim. Now the depth perception is always changing. So the first thing we worked on is what he called like butt out. So it was kind of keeping me in that like straight up and down. And that was the feel, right? Like everybody talks about a golf swing, like feel versus real. That was the feel to me, because I had this bad habit of moving backwards. So it was stuff like that where like I would shoot, you know, 200 shots where like that was the only thing that we were working on. And we would like,
you're like consciously thinking just about that.
Just about yeah. that. And then we would go, I had a bad habit of shooting on the way down. So then we would work on just shooting on the way up, and we would break it down piece by piece. And then slowly towards that summer, we'd start to put it all together. And there was good moments, bad moments. You know, I still wasn't shooting the ball great, but like I said, I needed to start then.
My first ever article I wrote as a national writer was with the headline, Doc Rivers Must Unleash Point Blake. And that was before the 2016-17 season, because it felt like at the time you were starting to do more from the mid-range, mm-hmm. running a little bit of, you know, big pick and rolls with yeah. DJ. And I saw what the Warriors were doing with Draymond Green with like Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry as a screener for him. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, I feel like Blake Griffin could do some of that. It didn't really happen until you got to Detroit, though.
Yeah, I mean, we also had Chris Paul, so it's like you're not going to take the ball out of his hands, you know, because he's the best playmaker in the league at the time. So it was kind of just like, how do we implement that? And I think people I don't think realize that I could even dribble or pass until like there was stretches where Chris mm-hmm. Paul got hurt.
Yes,
which is also fine, because again, If you have a Chris Paul, you let him do the Chris Paul things. You let him do the playmaking, the ball handling. But I thought we did get to a pretty good point of like in our offense of knowing when, you know, Chris would get off it. And then it was that short roll. And then you had J.J. Redick in the corner, Matt Barnes or Jamal Crawford, and then DeAndre at the rim. And that for us, when we really were rolling and in the regular season and we got to our good spots, that was kind of the basis of our offense. You know, let CP direct – pick and rolls. And if he doesn't have anything, then I would run up and, you know, we'd get a little short roll and go from there.
It's really a testament to how, like, a lot of NBA players have more to their games than the system allows.
Oh, yeah.
In many, many cases.
Yeah.
And I think with that, like, you did get to Detroit. You ran 12 per, over 12 per game your first full year there.
Yeah.
And so, like, you were suddenly unleashed. Do you feel like, obviously at that point you weren't at your athletic peak, but do you feel like you were at your technical peak at that point?
Yeah, I think so. I think like that season was definitely like sort of putting it all together. I also had the freedom to, and not to say I didn't have freedom in with the Clippers, but I had the ball in my hands all the time. It was a very different structured team, you know, where I always feel like, you know, guys that have the ball in their hands all the time, like, you get a lot of confidence from dribbling that thing and being able to come off and shoot. You know, I was shooting off the dribble a bunch. I was shooting step back threes. I was like, doing stuff that, like, when you're on a Clippers team with Chris Paul, JJ, DeAndre, and all these, Jamal, and all these guys, like, that's not what we needed from me, you know? So, yes, I think it all kind of did come together, but I did have, like, sort of that green light of, like, you know, got to go try to help, you know, will us to a win in a way.
And we'll be right back after this break. I mean, at this point, it's normal for big players to be handling the ball and running offense. And at this point, it's normal for guards to be setting screens. I mean, it's a positionless game at this point. But we're also seeing, you know, the rise of, you know, two big lineups again. I mean, the Knicks in the NBA Cup Final, of course, with Karl-Anthony Towns, Mitchell Robinson, tons of teams, OKC, Isaiah Hartenstein, and Chet Holmgren winning the finals last year. Houston with Adams and Şengün, and tons of teams have two big lineups.
Yeah.
You know, true bigs like Zach Edey. You know, granted, he's hurt right now for Memphis, but there's a lot of bigs. Where do you see the game evolving from here, Blake?
I don't know. I love seeing, like, bigger lineups. We've gotten to a point where, like, you have to – every person on the floor has to be able to shoot, pass, dribble, and defend. And like, there's not a weak link. There's not a weak area. Like, gone are the days, I think, of, like, oh, we'll go get two really good players and we'll put some good guys around them. Or get three and sprinkle in it, like the Oklahoma City model. Like, if I asked you, this has kind of been my favorite thing to ask recently, name the worst Oklahoma City defender that they play. You're still going to name a good defender.
It might be A.J. Mitchell.
Right.
And he's not bad.
He's not. Yeah, no. It's not the same as, like, I'm not going to say a name, but, like, we all know bad defenders, right? Yeah. They don't have that, right? That's where, like, the game has to go to. And the best part about Oklahoma City is, like, a lot of it's just, like, the effort that they put in. It is positionless basketball. I do think, like, the length, the more, and as guys are just more skilled and have more length, like, you're going to see, like, Houston's lineup is insane. Their height is insane.
Yeah.
That's sort of where I see, like, lineups going, in a way, of just guys just getting longer and more skilled, where you could see, like, you know, a team starting like 7'2", 7', 6'11", 6'8", and a point guard could be like 6'6", and you're like, well, this is ridiculous, you know?
Whereas before, I mean, it was, you know, two bigs and, you know, a regular size guard, a Chris Paul, JJ himself 6'4",
right.
You know, but he's not like a big NBA player. And
even look at, like, Golden State, like, their team was like, I mean, Draymond was undersized, Clay was a big guard, but Steph is, you know, Steph.
More like wide than
they,
tall.
Right, yeah. Yeah. They weren't like this, like, huge, like, crazy length team.
Small ball five with Draymond. Yeah.
And now it helps to have two of the best shooters of all time. But, you know, it is a little different.
Yeah, I mean, when we were talking about, you mentioned J.J. Redick, his podcast, it made me think about when we're talking about shooting improvement. For a long time, I've said, you know, Ben Simmons shoots with the wrong hand because, you know, left-handed player, even though he shot over 75% of his non at-rim attempts were with his right hand.
He floaters, does everything right.
Hook shots, yes.
Yeah.
And J.J. Redick on his podcast said DeAndre Jordan before, or he mentioned it on his podcast, that he once said to DJ, you should try switching shooting hands. Yeah. And after he said that on his show, I looked at DJ's numbers, and like 80% of his non-two-handed dunks were with his right hand.
Yeah.
Was that ever a conversation in the locker room?
Switching hands? Me being not a great free throw shooter myself, getting to like, you know, the 70s, and maybe I shot mid 70s for my career, but I tried to not ever give advice on shooting, you know? The guy that's like had to hire a shooting coach, it's like, I shouldn't be coming in there and be like, listen here, DJ, this is how you do it.
Leave it to JJ.
Yeah, exactly. Shout out JJ Redick, exactly. He is the person who can be like, well, maybe you should try right hand. But yeah, it's funny, like some of these guys, like, I swear DeAndre's right-handed for the most part, you know? And he worked at it. Ben, I thought sort of like the kind of the same thing of like the time to start working on it was like 5 years ago. You know, it was like mm-hmm. a lot. You have to start.
And he had people right trying away. To. The Sixers yeah. former shooting coach John Townsend tried to make him switch. And really? He's like, I don't want to stick with this.
Really?
Understandably yeah. so. It's a yeah. huge change. Not it many is. Guys do that.
And you know, the thing that I would say to my shooting coach all the time is like, he's like, just trust me. This will. It's all. And I'd be like, yeah, but Bob. I have to make shots right now. Like I can't just be like, all right, well, 2 years from now. So that was like the frustrating thing too. But, you know, his advice too, which I think is great advice for any and every player, is like, yeah, you work on the things that you need to work on that you're not as good at, you're not good at, but like you still go do the things that got you to this point, you know, and that can always be like what you hang your hat on. And I tell all my young, like my high school kids that like there's always, you know, everybody, especially with social media now, everybody hears about their haters or they hear about like, oh, they said I can't do this. They said I can't do this. And it's like, yeah, they said that for a reason. So work on it.
Yeah.
Prove them wrong, but don't prove them right. And don't go away from that thing that makes you really good.
Still need to be true to yourself
exactly,
while yeah. also continuing to add layers to yeah. what makes you already successful to have haters.
Exactly. Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
You have haters yeah. for a reason. Yeah. It's like a good yeah. thing. It's a good thing you have haters. Yeah,
exactly.
This is a
embrace
good,
the hate.
Yes, you have hate. To embrace yeah. it no matter what you're doing with any type of public attention. So we mentioned your time with the Pistons. Mm-hmm. Was that trade a blindside for you?
Yeah. It was I had gotten wind of it because I knew one of my best friends is very close with people in the Pistons organization. And, you know, I tried to figure out if it was true or not. My agent was calling all that. And by the time when I found out to the time the trade went through, it was like, you know, 2 hours and I was trying to get information and couldn't really get information. And I saw the tweet and I was just like, put the phone down. I was playing a game on the trampoline with my kids and I saw the notification and I just tossed the phone on the
let it outside of the
oh no yeah that's so funny. The phone is just bouncing on the trampoline. I tossed it into the grass and I just kept playing the game and I'll never forget. I mean, I hope my kids were so young they had no clue what was going on, but I just remember kind of just being like, wow, like that's crazy, you know, like that was like the last thing when I woke up that morning, that was the last thing I would have guessed had happened. But it's fine, you know, and I appreciated my time in Detroit. And I think it all worked out.
Clipper for life.
Yeah, baby. Gonna retire. Gonna retire Clipper.
What was your reaction to that the shirt, the Martin Luther King? And
you know what's crazy, dude? I didn't even like it, didn't even register. So what had happened, we had the whole free agency meeting. They had done this like a walkthrough. It was like a timeline. You know, they had like blown up picture of my childhood home and like they did it out in the concourse of Staples. And then we walk into Staples and sit in the seats and they're like, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the jersey retirement of Blake Griffin. You know, I'm sure this has all been documented. I don't know. I don't read stuff. But so they do this whole thing. The jersey goes up in the rafters. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, all right, this is a lot. Because we told them the whole time. It's like, let's talk basketball. Like, let's talk. You know, I don't need the fanfare. But you do appreciate that they went to that effort, right? So after the whole meeting, you know, we sat there and talked for a long time and I come down and all the Clippers employees are down in the concourse and I see they all have matching shirts on, but I didn't even really like, I didn't pay attention to what exactly it was, you know, and driving home, like of course the t-shirt was already on Twitter and I was like, oh my God, they have Nelson Mandela on there. Obama? I was like, oh, I can't believe, like, I didn't even, it didn't even register to me, one, and I can't believe they did that, too. And now it lives on in infamy. Jared Stacy, our, you know, like at Amazon, he was speaking to us at a seminar, and at the end of his speech, he goes, and, you know, I do want to single out, you know, one person because, you know, it takes a lot, you know, that he believed in us. And I'm like, where's he going with this? And I see him pull this black t-shirt from underneath the podium, and he somehow got his hands on this t-shirt and passed them around to the whole Amazon crew. And then I do Candace Parker's podcast, and I click on the Zoom, and she's wearing it. I was just like, God, don't let this thing come back. Don't let this thing come back around. But it's already out there. It's funny.
It's an amazing shirt. Yeah. I mean, it was Albert Einstein was on that.
Yeah, Einstein, of course, dude. I mean, come on. Oh, don't act surprised. I mean, it's me you're talking about here, baby. Come on. So good. Einstein, yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. Like, it shows, A, how cold business can be.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, I was, you know, I had a conversation recently with somebody. It's crazy. I had a phone call with somebody recently, and he's like, man, you know, we were talking. I mentioned I might have you on the podcast. Mm. And he's like, oh, man, I remember years ago when he was almost traded to Denver. And this is February 2016. Chris Broussard had reported that Blake Griffin and Lance Stephenson were offered for Danilo Gallinari, Kenneth Faried, Will Barton, and Nikola Jokic. Did you hear anything about that at the time? Did the Clippers say anything to you at the time about that rumor?
I don't even remember, to be honest. I really don't. I think I was like assured that that wasn't true, but I can't remember like the details of it. I kind of stayed out of a lot of that.
You just ignore it because you know there's so much noise.
Yeah.
Was it the same thing in July 2016 when there was rumors about the Celtics wanting to trade for you and Doc Rivers went on Woj's podcast and they opened the show? Doc said, I have to say something before we get started, Woj. We're not trading Blake Griffin. All these bloggers and radio guys in Boston. Yeah, we're not talking trade with Blake.
Yeah, I remember that.
Remember that one?
The trade. Yeah, I honestly, the trade rumors kind of like come and go. I truly don't like put much thought into any of them.
I mean, I think you kind of have to compartmentalize as a player. Otherwise, it'll drive you nuts, right?
Probably should have. I should have had my ear to the ground a little more on the Detroit one, but here we are.
Hey, I mean, things happen the way they happen. I
exactly. mean, regardless. They're out of your control. So it's just like, what are you going to do?
100%. You know? Exactly. Unless you have a no trade clause, it's out of your control. I mean, ultimately, though, like, those were good years with the Clippers. And, you know, I thought it was cool. CP3 posted the FaceTime of you three talking to each other after. I mean, unfortunate situation for him with the Clippers.
I kind of said I'm not like at a loss for words. I talked about it at length like on our show, but like I felt like a dad that was like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed, you know, like you really let me down on this one. I understand, like, hey, like if you sign Chris Paul and you're like, this is not working out. But like you knew who he was going in, and on top of that, hey, you know what? You say like this just truly isn't working out, and we have to make this decision. Like, I think like Ty Lue, Ballmer, I think they all, you know, it's you owe him a conversation, you know, like because this was apparently like a deal that like was like, hey, you know, I'm coming back here. This is going to be my last year. Like, I want to retire a Clipper, you know. So like, what went wrong? You know, like what happened there?
And where do you think he goes?
I don't know. I usually don't like it as a player. Like when we had guys that were free agents, I tried to stay out of it. I just always gave him that thing of like, hey, support. We obviously want you back, but I support you no matter what. I know you have to make the decision that's right for you and your family and all that. And it sounds cliche, but truly is true because that's what I would want to hear if I was in that situation. So I haven't asked CP. I saw him yesterday at the game. I know he's working out. And I think the want to play is still there. I think he just needs to process, you know, all this and sort of figure out what's most important.
He played all 82 last year.
Yeah.
And he played very well
with
the Spurs.
Yeah.
And so I think this early season, you know, maybe his abilities did fall off a cliff, you know, at his age, but maybe it's just with the spotty minutes. slow start.
Yeah.
I still think there's something there with him, which is a shame. I just hope it doesn't end this way with him. I hope he gets an opportunity on a championship contending team, and it'd be an awesome story if he gets that chance.
And his mind is like, his mind is the best, like one of the best parts about his game. I mean, like, I would think a team, you know, like, you should lean on that, you know, and you give him like, you give him the ability to have input and, you know, see what he sees or hear what he sees. I think it's beneficial. So it was just strange to me that wasn't, that's not how he was received at the Clippers, you know, because if I was a head coach, like, I think I would want a guy who for 20 years was known as like, you know, one of the best, like, mm-hmm. even if you're like, yeah, I got, you know, I don't think he can play now or whatever it is. You still want to hear from guys. The best coaches, like Joe Mazzulla, was incredible at that. Like he would come ask, you know, Al or myself, like, and he didn't have to ask me. Like, now Al's been there for years and super well respected and seen a lot of basketball, but he didn't have to come ask me. And I always really, I really appreciate that about Joe. Is he truly, like, there's no ego on that guy, you know?
I mean, he's learning too. Young coach, he was thrust into it after Udoka was fired. And I mean, ultimately, like, you, the coaches, I think I was overly critical of Mazzulla his first year with the Celtics.
Yeah.
I mean, and then he became a great coach in part because of his mind.
Mm-hmm.
To your point, coaches learn and grow as well.
What'd you think his first year? What was like your...
I feel like it was a bit messy. Mm-hmm. Decision-making wise, his feel for timeouts.
Yeah.
I felt like that was the big thing that sticks in my mind going looking back now is the feel for timeouts. But again, like, that's, it's a difference when you're in that assistant seat and you moved into the head spot. It's like that takes time. And yeah. I just, you know, I should have given him more time before some of the criticism.
Yeah. That's one of those things that I don't think you can really get good at until you're forced to do it. You know,
like, it's not like you're an assistant thinking I'd call a timeout here.
Yeah. You know? I mean, and, you know, we all watch games and you're like, you see a shot go up and you're like, if that goes in, they better call timeout. But I think what Joe does, and you kind of see it this year a little bit more, Joe's like, mm-mm, you guys figure it out, you know, and or like you keep going. And then sometimes he will call a quick timeout and then, you know, it's about five guys. So I think it's like, there's no like exact rhyme or rhythm or reasoning behind like a coach's timeout schedule other than like stopping a run or something here and there, but it kind of also has to follow in line with your coaching style and how you motivate and how you want to see the team play. So it's easy for me to sit over there and be like, I should have called a timeout or I wouldn't have called a timeout there. But I it's something I did kind of take note of, but again, I was just curious what your first year assumptions were.
What's your favorite Lob City Clippers memory?
Oh man, we went on a 18 game win streak one like December. I don't think we lost the month of December. Maybe we lost. I think we lost it on New Year's Day. Yeah, I don't think we lost in December. And that was like truly such fun basketball because I think we were in Utah and we were down like 12 or 13 in the fourth quarter. Starters weren't playing that great. The bench got us back into it. Starters came back in. And that was maybe like win number four or something like that. And from then on, the rest of that month, we played with like this confidence of like, doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter if we're down seven. The team could get up 10-0 in the first quarter for the start of the game. We didn't care. And we played with like that so much confidence and played so hard. And everybody was playing hard and nobody, like, there was no like, man, I didn't play my usual minutes. I didn't get my shots. There was none of that. Not to say we had like that issue, but you know, every now and then teams have like, you know, there's always somebody that's not quite happy about his minutes, right? Or his shots. So it was just really, really fun basketball. And I think we also we all just like enjoyed each other. You know, we played cards on the plane, we'd go out to dinner, we'd do all that stuff. It was a fun team to be around.
We'll be right back. Not a lot of true smaller guards anymore with the amount of big ball handlers there are. I mean, Trae Young, one of them, Jalen Brunson.
Yeah.
But he's more, he's a combo, but a smaller guard.
Yeah.
Jalen Brunson was unbelievable on Saturday. He was
crazy, dude. His footwork, man, and his touch is exceptional. His footwork, he just has every move. He has every counter, and he's on balance, but it doesn't seem like he's on. And that's actually something he said to us in our post game interview with him. It was like he was like, I'm on balance, but nobody else would be on balance. And you're like, yeah, it's his ability to use his body is elite.
Is there something, I mean, like with a small guard like him, he's at Villanova, the footwork was apparent then. Like you could see he had great footwork at Nova. And he comes to the NBA and obviously is very successful as the secondary ball handler behind Luka, you know, and then he becomes a star with the Knicks. And he showed star flashes when he was with Dallas as well. Obviously, athleticism is such an important trait to play at the NBA level.
Yeah.
But do you think sometimes we maybe overlook the footwork aspect, the feel aspect that a Brunson has, even if they are small in stature?
Yeah. I mean, I think. Yes, it's hard to say if it's overlooked or not to scouts or to whatever. But I mean, you're seeing a lot of really good players right now. Jokic, Luka, Jalen Brunson, like all these guys, and they are athletic, right? But like there's the Thompson twins level of athleticism, and then there's like, you know, just athleticism.
Agile in small spaces.
Right.
Like Jokic is athletic in how he quickly changes direction.
Exactly.
Whether it's on offense, how he his mind is athletic.
I think we always think of athleticism as like, oh, wow, he jumps so high. He's so explosive. He's so quick or fast. And there's so many different nuances to athleticism.
Quick twitch, you know, movements is athletic too.
And even like touch to a certain degree is athleticism, right? Being able to like take a hit and still, you know, have the ability to recenter, rebalance, and get a shot off. Like Luka's so good at that. Like watching him, I mean, he gets a lot of free throws, and dude, he gets a shot up on the rim. 95%, I'm making that up. 95% of the time he gets fouled, you know, which is not as easy to do as it sounds. Cause he's just in such good control, pace, his timing. And those guys, Brunson in particular, is so, so good at that.
Another small point guard, Ryan Nemhard, rookie with the Mavericks.
Yeah.
He's fun, man.
Yeah. I mean, since he's been in the starting lineup, my favorite thing was like he had, what was it, eight? He was averaging, I can't remember, his first like couple starts, three games or so, and he had like two turnovers and like 20-something assists.
That's the Nemhard experience.
Yeah.
Same thing, you know, in college. I
mean? Yeah. And it's also amazing like watching him because you're like, oh, that's it's Andrew Nemhard. You're like, oh, no, it's not. No, it's not. You know, they look exactly the same. He's just a little, Ryan's just a little bit smaller, you know? It's just a complete, and I was watching with one of my buddies. And he was like, oh, I didn't realize Nemhard got traded to Dallas. I was like, he didn't. It's his brother. Because it's mind blowing.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a high field player. I mean, he had like an all-time great assist turnover ratio at Gonzaga his senior year. I mean, he's unbelievable. Rookies in general this year, Flagg and Queen and Con Knipple and Dylan Harper and Cedric Coward. A lot of good rookies this year. Who stood out the most to you?
I mean, obviously Cooper and adding Ryan to the starting lineup, Nemhard, and taking the playmaking responsibilities off Cooper. I thought that was a pretty big mistake from the beginning, is to like put that on Cooper, and now he looks great. I think the most impressive to me is Con Knipple is unbelievable. Like shoot, like I think 18 points a game on like 40% from three. I think he's shooting like eight threes, and just the way he plays, like he moves really, really well. Strong, like he puts the ball on the floor a little bit. Like he is such a solid rookie. And that's not to say that Cooper is fantastic. I love watching Queen, like as he's sort of figuring it out. Another guy who plays, it's footwork, it's playing at his own pace. You're really seeing like how talented these kids are, and how like all these kids that are coming in. This is an exceptional draft class.
On the note of NBA guys being like more mature or whatever, we talked about it with Wemby, Castle, and I mean, Cedric Coward is one of the most impressive people I've ever interviewed. I interviewed him before the draft.
Really?
Like, I don't know if you've spoken to him
but I love his game.
He's like 35 years old.
Really?
Maturity.
That's great.
I mean, it's nuts.
I've heard he's great.
It's really crazy. And I think, like, obviously there's, you know, like Derek Queen is still clearly a teenager. And that's not, you know,
not a knock at all because he is.
Exactly. Yeah. He is. He's still just a kid. And so, but I think, like, with a lot of these guys, I wonder, why is that? Like, what, because I talk to PR people, they say the same thing, who have been in the league for 30 years. And they're like, the kids coming in these days are all so mature. Is it like more investment from, you know, when they're at youth levels at this time? Is it something with the internet and seeing the way players operate? What is it?
I want to say social media.
You think so?
Because, like, these kids now are like, they're almost becoming brands in high school. You know, like, they're seeing how they present themselves to the world, and the world is able to see them, and they have to be more buttoned up, especially in social media I don't know the answer. I'm like kind of like thinking through this at the same time, but in my opinion, maybe that's it, because these guys are like Jared McCain has been huge on TikTok forever. And, like, dude, he's so well-spoken, handles himself really, really well. Like, he's light years ahead because he's I think they're used to this spotlight a little bit earlier on, and they've done a really good job. And at the same time, you have to be mature enough to realize that and act the right way. And so a credit to them. But maybe that's helping a little bit. I don't know. And then also, like, I would say too, like, you can have whatever opinion you want about, like, LeBron or Kobe or, like, whoever as players, but, like, when have you seen, like, LeBron, you know, like, really, like, do something, you're like, oof, like, that was, like, not a great example? Or I'm sure people will dig through, like, whatever, and find
in the
clip.
Comments, you know, comment, I mean? Right now, yeah, if you can't have an idea for something, like, shut LeBron up, Blake. Said, like, please comment.
Right, but you know what I mean? He holds himself to a really, like, high standard of, like, how he presents himself, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's a lot of, like, really good examples of NBA players, older guys who carry themselves really, really well. The Stephs, you know, like, mm-hmm. go on down the line. And I think that helps as well, too, for the guys to look up to players, current players, or older guys, guys that have just retired, like the Dirks, you know, the Steve Nashes, like those guys, like, we had great examples.
I think that makes total sense. I mean, I think it's so many different factors. It's probably a super long list with why.
It's different for every player. Yeah, exactly. But, like, maybe that, I don't know. That's 100%. My theory. I'm sticking with it.
How's your transition been to, you know, post-career stuff, being on TV?
Being a media member now?
Yeah, being a media member.
It's been a blast.
Welcome,
man,
to the dark side. Yeah.
It's been a blast. You know, I never imagined myself doing any sort of studio analysis, anything like that. And I think it was mostly because when I played, you'd see it and I'd be like, they're shitting on me so much that I'm just like, I don't want to do that to guys. And when I retired, I was, you know, I was watching, this is not a knock on anybody, but sports media and how games are covered, particularly the, just the media, like, react, you know, watch and react stuff. I just wasn't happy with what I was watching. And when Amazon got the deal with the NBA, they sort of talked to me about, you know, changing how people view that. And that's when I was like, oh, that's really cool, because I don't want to sit there and complain about, you know, what I'm watching on TV and have an opportunity to change it and not do it. And I've loved it. Like, my favorite part, like, I sit there with three, like, legends of the game of basketball, like Steve Nash, two-time MVP, Dirk, MVP, champion, all world, UD, like, one of the most respected guys to play that, you know, in his era, three championships, like, seen everything. My favorite part is when we're not even on camera and we're just sitting watching games. Because if I think of a question, like, and, you know, you watch games, you're always thinking about stuff. I get to ask Steve Nash what, like, with this point guard, or I ask Dirk, or, you know, whatever it is, a defensive question for UD, and, like, I just, they're like who I watch games with, you know, on Fridays now, or, you know, whatever, for the cup. But it's been a blast. Like, I thought I was going to enjoy it, but it's been more enjoyable. And I try to look at it from, like, a glass half full approach too. Like, I there's something I can appreciate about everybody's game. I think that's just, like, who I am genuinely. And that's not to say you can't, you know, be critical. Like, I think I've been critical at times, but, like, be constructive in your criticism. And I sort of try to frame things of like, if I'm in that locker room, if I'm that coach, like this is what I would try to do, you know, not just be just beating people down,
making a suggestion attached. Yeah, to and by
the
way,
that's probably that might not be the answer. Like these coaches are coaches for a reason. They're very very smart.
You're coming with a solution that you have in mind.
Right.
It may be right, yeah. Maybe wrong, but you're not just criticizing. You're also coming with an idea.
Yeah, my point is don't complain about something and not try to help it. Yeah. You know, even though nobody asked for it, but like that's I don't know. That's sort of my
unsolicited
approach.
Advice with Blake Griffin, new segment.
Yeah, exactly. For you. Here's what you should do.
I mean, I think you guys have been great so far. I mean, and the chemistry is only going to get better over the course of time, better than it already is. I felt like from opening night, you guys were good. As if I think I tweeted out, it's like, as if they had done a bunch of games before.
Yeah.
Is the way it sort of felt watching you guys. Has Jeff Bezos invited you on any of his spaceships yet?
Not yet, man. I'm still
would you go on one
hope.
Of those spaceships?
I don't know that I would go to space. I think I would have to wait a little bit after the last one. I don't know if I want the astronaut tag yet, but I don't know. It's interesting.
Someday?
An interesting thought. Yeah. I mean, I definitely am not one of those people like, no, I would never go. I think it'd be fascinating to go up into space. Absolutely fascinating. I just need some assurance that it's very safe.
You know what I mean? Yeah, you don't want to be the first. It's like the earlier airplanes.
Yeah.
They crash a lot more than they do nowadays.
Exactly.
Boats,
exactly.
You don't want to be on the Titanic. Yeah.
And I'm no Katy Perry. I'm not that adventurous. So.
Maybe someday. I'd love to do it someday. It would be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be cool though. You know, guy grew up in Oklahoma, becomes a star NBA player, becomes an astronaut.
Who would have thought?
who'd you grow up rooting for growing up in Oklahoma?
NBA team, yeah. NBA-wise? You know what? I honestly, I was a huge Michael Jordan fan, but like this was pre league pass. Like this was like pre-internet, obviously.
Yeah,
like,
pre-OKC too.
Right. So I couldn't really I could only watch national TV games. So that's why Bulls were so big, you know, obviously Knicks and Lakers, but I just every kid my age, I think Michael Jordan was.
Were you born?
89.
89. I was 90. Okay. So I think you had a year ahead of me to see a little bit more Jordan when we were in the 90s.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know, man. I feel like I grew up in Boston area. And so for me, it was obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was simple. Yeah. But I always wonder what it would be like to grow up in one of those cities without an NBA team. Because I think right now in Vegas, I mean, they don't have a team yet. But there's obviously people, probably a lot of Lakers fans at this point. I'd imagine here in Vegas, but ultimately,
Knicks fans are literally everywhere.
Exactly. 100%. I mean, it's cool now though, one of the most passionate fan bases is in Oklahoma with the OKC Thunder.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's been really fun to watch. And it's been great for basketball in Oklahoma, you know, for high school basketball and all that. Cause I think just having access, seeing them, the players are real. They're, you see them, you know, in the community. I think it's been so good for Oklahoma. I was a huge college basketball fan. My dad was a high school basketball coach, and he had a couple of players. He had a player go play at Oklahoma State and Tulsa. So I was really, really into college basketball because his players were my idols, you know. And they were in high school, and then they'd go to college, and that was it for me. So the NBA, I loved it. I loved, like I said, Jordan, but I was a little bit more locked in on college basketball early on. I grew up an Oklahoma State fan because one of my dad's players, Joe Adkins, played at Oklahoma State. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I actually didn't like Oklahoma.
Wow.
And Oklahoma offered my brother. My brother committed to Oklahoma. Oklahoma State never offered him. And it kind of just I was no. Yeah, I don't like that. But I was an Oklahoma State fan more than Oklahoma Sooner fan as a kid.
I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to be a Thunder fan right now growing up in Oklahoma. If you were born, I don't know, in 2010 instead right now, you're a teenager watching this team right
Massive Oklahoma City fan.
My God.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And it's cool that the fans, it's just I always say the people in Oklahoma are what make Oklahoma, Oklahoma. There's really special people and the fans there are great.
What's your prediction for Tuesday night between the Knicks and the Spurs?
Oh, boy. I don't want the Spurs this run that they're on to end. And Wimby, I'm curious what his minute restriction is going to bump to. It can't stay the same, but I don't
21
imagine
on Saturday. I'd imagine he's playing first quarter.
20, yeah.
Yeah. It's 28? Get him to 25 or 30, something like that.
I love
somewhere
that.
Somewhere in the middle.
I love that. I'm going to go out on a limb and just take the young boys and say the Spurs. But I do really like the Knicks. I like what they're doing. I think Mike Brown's done an incredible job. Obviously, we talked about Jalen Brunson. OG is like, he's playing great basketball, just so decisive. Josh Hart, like, I love that Knicks team. That, by the way, Oklahoma City Knicks was my pick for the finals beginning of the season. And I was like, man, I think we're going to get that in the cup finals. Final, preview, you know what I mean?
In the cup, yeah.
And here comes San Antonio to spoil it. So I don't know. I love it. I'm so excited for Tuesday. Who knows?
It could be a mirror of what happens in May. You never know. You never know.
Yeah, you truly don't. I mean, it's that's why you're always so hesitant. You know, we had Zach Lowe on the show, like, I don't know, last Friday night. And he was saying, like, you know, Oklahoma City or the versus the field. And we were just kind of like, maybe it might be Oklahoma City. But then, and then you see them be like, you know, human for a second, but you just never know. There's so many variables that it's just like,
one game makes you think.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, for sure. It's just one game, but it makes you think. They've won 24 of 26, but you're still like, wait a minute here.
Yeah. Is OKC in trouble? They're on a one game losing streak.
Next up on first day.
Exactly.
Are you working on anything else, Blake? I mean, you've always been in a comedy. We talked about Norm Macdonald's earlier. You're on a show your rookie year. You doing any writing or anything like that?
I am a little bit, not really for stand up. I'm working on a couple things that would kind of sort of be like sports comedy adjacent.
That's awesome.
More sports heavy, but yeah, nothing I can really like share yet. Yeah. But some stuff I'm really excited about, and I hope we get to make it. And yeah, I think it's just like I'm obviously a huge basketball fan, but just a sports fan in general. And I sort of love bringing, you know, like introducing the world of sports to people. Cause I think a lot of times I've noticed, especially since I've retired, like people are always asking you questions that you're like, huh, that's crazy. People don't really understand that sports is just like everything else. Like there's politics, there's cliques, there's people that, you know, come from the coaching trees and they, I don't know. It's very similar to like a lot of other things. And I think, you know, it'd be fun to sort of like introduce that to people. Well,
I hope that happens, Blake. I'm sure you have a bunch of stories you can adapt to your show or movie or limited series, whatever it is, and make it a reality. Thank you so much for joining me, man. It's been awesome to see you in sports media doing what you do. I think you're clearly a star doing what you're doing. It's very cool to see. And I appreciate you taking the time here in Vegas to join.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Big, big thank you to Blake Griffin for joining me on today's episode. Thank you to the whole team here in Vegas for producing today's episode and all of the other shows we got going on here in Vegas at the NBA Cup. Thank you to Father John Misty for the music. Appreciate you giving us a listen. We'll be back again later this week. We got more coming with the NBA Cup. We got Tom, of course, on Thursday. That's all coming up on the Kevin O'Connor Show. Have a good day.